From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1938 in a grand old hotel in New Orleans called, and I'm about to butcher this, but I'm going to do my best, the Monteleone. It's a special place, the kind of half-lit scene that might have Cole Porter's music spilling out onto the streets, and there were always writers there. According to the Georgetowner Online, Truman Capote used to brag that he was born there. Turns out that Capote's mother had stayed at the Hotel Monteleone during her pregnancy, but hotel staff transported her to a New Orleans hospital for birth. On any given night, you might find Tennessee Williams there, William Faulkner. But in the cocktail world, that hotel is even more famous for the drink it produced in 1938. If you've been out recently at Rochester's growing cocktail scene, maybe you've come across a Vieux Carré, a mixture of rye whiskey, brandy, vermouth, and Benedictine and bitters. The Vieux Carré was born at that New Orleans hotel as a kind of tribute to the different ethnic groups of the city. Again, according to the Georgetowner, the Benedictine to the French influence, the rye to the American, the sweet vermouth, the Italian, and the bitters as a tribute to the Caribbean. I could have chosen so many drinks, all of which have a story. I chose one that I just happened to be seeing lately in my own circle of friends. That's the pleasure of the cocktail scene. History, style, always a story, and hopefully something that you enjoy. And by the way, that hotel is still there in New Orleans with a carousel lounge, an actual revolving carousel that might make you dizzy before you even start drinking if you go. Rochester scene is growing now, growing in a way that makes it probably bigger than its size. We're going to be talking about what our market is doing as a cocktail scene this hour. And we're previewing the 2016 Rochester Cocktail Revival, which is coming up, and there's a lot going on there that you should know about. So let me go ahead and welcome our guest for the hour. Chuck Sarankoski's here, the founder of the Rochester Cocktail Revival, the co-owner of Good Luck and Cure, the co-founder of Boomtown Table Online. Chuck, nice to see you back here.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, is it Vieux Carré? How do you pronounce it? Vieux?
I always say Vieux.
Vieux.
But I'm about as French as I am
Russian.
Vieux Carré, but somebody listening who speaks French, I speak Spanish, I don't speak French, is going to tell me how to pronounce it. So Vieux Carré, is it a good drink?
Fantastic. It's a Manhattan derivative, so if you like Manhattans,
which I do,
you'll enjoy that drink.
Yeah. All right, Donnie Clutterbuck's here, the head bartender at Cure. Donnie, nice to see you as well.
Good to be here.
Zach Makita's here, the head bartender at The Revelry and a former Buffalo bartender. Zach, nice to have you here.
It's good to be here.
And Elise Barnard is here, bartender at Good Luck. She is, well, we're going to be talking about her competition work and cocktail competition this hour as well. At least nice to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I chose a drink that I've been seeing and I had a chance to try for the first time recently. I'm one of those sort of lame, I always want a Manhattan. You know, I mean, it's sort of, you get into these ruts, I know. But what is, I guess, as trends go? Donnie, I'll start with you. What is the trendiest single drink in town, if there is one? Is there one?
I don't know if I can peg there being one single drink that's really trendy right now, but what I think is going to become more prevalent, I guess, is just doing classics very well. So your boring Manhattan, I think, is not that boring. I think it's kind of boring to always want something different because then you're never quite satisfied with something, right? So really, you're an ideal person because you know what you like. You know, that's great. And I think we're still in the middle of everybody trying to figure out what they like because what we're doing is not something that has been common for a long time. So find a drink, go with it until you're bored with it, and do something else. I think that is the next trend, is a lack of a trend, maybe.
That is a great answer. Elise, yeah. If you didn't have the chance to cheat off of his answer, how would you have answered the question? Is there a trendiest drink in town right now?
No, there's not really a trendy drink. People like what they like, and I like those people. Like, you like a Manhattan. Maybe you come in and say, I like a Manhattan, and you let me take a riff off of it, and you can get a Remember the Maine. If you like Scotch, we can do a Rob Roy. Or if you like Benedictine, do a Bobby Burns. And then they're all basically a variation of a drink that you like, and you're still sticking in the realm of your comfort zone without going crazy. You don't need to like juice.
And that, to me, is really good bartending, is you're not denigrating someone for having something that they like they tend to stick to, but you can still pivot and keep them in that same world, but let them try a few variations or a few kind of derivatives.
Exactly.
So I dig it. So I appreciate that. Zach, for you, how would you talk about trends?
You know, I think that what Elise and Donnie said is absolutely right, and it kind of reminds me of the owner of Bar High Five in Japan says that there's four recipes for every cocktail, and there's the original, the derivative, the bartender's preference, and the customer's preference. Mm. Number four is the most important always. So if you come up and you want something, you know, it's in our best interest to make sure that you get that. So the trends, I don't see anything that's really vast except for the personal preference of the guest in front of me.
Okay. You know? Chuck?
I think as far as growth and popularity, agave spirits have really, in the last year, year and a half, have surged. Mezcal in particular went from something that no one would touch or no one knew anything about to something that's actually called for. And, you know, back to touch on everyone else's point, when you say, it's almost delightful to hear you say, my boring old Manhattan, because, again, being in this scene that we've created and that we've put energy behind, what I would expect a radio host that maybe doesn't go out quite as often as we do to say, oh, my drink is just a boring old Budweiser or something like that. You're picking a craft cocktail that is by no means boring and is by all means fantastic. It's not, you know, enjoying this scene doesn't have to be esoteric or have, you know, pushing some culinary boundaries. But look where we've come. You're on air saying a boring drink is something that any of us would gladly make you instead of a vodka Sprite. We'd love to make you a Manhattan.
And for anybody out there that likes Budweiser, that's not boring either.
It's not boring, but
it's boring. It's boring. And first of all, what do you know about me? Maybe I go out more than you.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
I've never seen
agreed before.
I don't. I really
yeah,
don't.
We agreed to keep your reputation intact. Yeah. So, you know. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Parents of 4-year-olds are always out every night. No. By the way, you mentioned a vodka and Sprite or something. Is that what you just mentioned, Zach or Chuck? Is that?
I did. It doesn't mean if that's your favorite drink, there's something wrong with you. But our mission is always to show you that there's a better way, because chances are you like a vodka Sprite because you like the taste of something liquor-y, like meaning liquor, and then a mass marketed soda product. You can do better. We think you can do better.
Okay, well, that's more diplomatic than you were 2 years ago on the show. No. When you guys were kicking the cocktail revival, I wish I had pulled the tape. Because didn't you say that if somebody orders an appletini, you will throw them out of your restaurant?
I didn't know this was going to be like a Senate subcommittee hearing, but...
Senator, answer the question.
Okay, but
can someone
again,
order an appletini in your restaurant?
Okay, yes, so an appletini is a little bit different because then you think that, first of all, that doesn't exist. I don't think you'd get thrown out, but we're just not going to make it for you because we'll make you a vodka Sprite. I wish you'd order something different. An appletini... It's made up ingredients. It's like going and ordering the food at a high quality establishment and then just ordering gummy bears and no one put them on the menu and like, well, where are my gummy? Well, we don't have gummy bears, sir. I can't do anything about that, you know.
That's very well anyway. Put.
And if I could too, I mean, I guess kind of going back to the mission statement, right, that Chuck was mentioning. If you come in and order an appletini, I'll do my very best, hand to God, that I will make you something that will hit your palate. You know, if I have some apple schnapps hanging out, some German apple schnapps, then I'll do that with some vodka and some lime and some simple, and I'll make you happy. You know, and I guess to try and make the best possible settlement, the best compromise for somebody that might not know exactly what they want, and us hopefully being as trained and as versed as we are, to kind of hit that middle ground to make everybody feel good.
Actually something that is just happening in emerging markets right now is that drinks are becoming not candy but food. They're taking the course of foods, whereas before they were candy with the appletini, which is just a word that shouldn't even exist. It's like a combination of candy and a and an improper definition of a martini. So it was candy, and it's all becoming treated as if it's food in terms of balance. So I suppose that's a trend in certain places, it is a reality in others.
Okay. Liz, you making many appletinis these days?
Somebody asked for an appletini last night. I'm not going to lie. They wanted a dry appletini. I don't know.
It's not a thing?
Oh, not exactly. A dry appletini is not a thing. I mean, we do not have apple pucker. I mean, sorry. But we have other drinks that you'll like. If you order an appletini, we know you like a sweeter drink. And you can pretty much go from there. You can say, oh, do you like the flavor of strawberry? And then you can give them something that's up and sweet and has strawberry in it. And that's doable because we have strawberry puree.
Okay, well, see, I referenced 2 years ago when Senator Sarankowski was on the program for the first time.
Oh, no.
When he wasn't nearly as diplomatic, so he's getting a lot of good political coaching. But he was on a couple of years ago when the Rochester Cocktail Revival was kicking off. And so, Chuck, you guys are getting ready for what year of the Cocktail Revival?
This will be the third year.
Third year, yeah, right. So What I want to do is have you set kind of a bit of a calendar for our listeners in case they want to plan for it. And then I think there are some really interesting kind of tangents to this conversation, because as much as you would think that these kind of festivals, it's festival season, people are doing all kinds of things, Rochester is, it's not unique in a cocktail revival, but there's not a whole lot like it, especially in this state. And that's pretty cool to talk about. So let's just start with what is coming up. Chuck, when is the cocktail revival?
The cocktail revival happens Monday, May 9th through Sunday, May 15th. So a full week of varied events. Most of the events happen towards the end of that week, so meaning Thursday the 12th, Friday the 13th, Saturday the 14th, et cetera. We're about 2 weeks away here. And we've obviously expanded it this year to make it a few days longer and filled those days up with lots of cool things to do for both enthusiasts and consumers and also industry and practicing bartending professionals.
Sure. And you're online with a series of events, schedule of events where?
Sure. So you can see the full schedule online at rochestercocktailrevival.com. A warning to everyone, it's organized very well, but there's a lot of stuff. So each day is kind of packed with events. So you'll see, you will also see a listings of events happening on the 5th on Cinco de Mayo, because some of our bars are having parties for Cinco de Mayo. So that's kind of a free preview. But the principal events will happen, again, the May 9th through 15th. You can see that all on rochestercocktailrevival.com.
Okay. And this is not hyperbole to say that in the past, the last couple of years, we've talked about this event. Close to the event, a lot was already sort of sold out or sort of spoken for. So this isn't the host saying get online and get tickets now or whatever. But are some events ticketed, some events not ticketed?
There's a mixture of first of all, let me say something that is important. All events are 21 plus, yeah, no matter where they're at. Then there's a mixture of events that are free to attend, meaning free entry, and then there are some events that are ticketed. And those the mix of events includes, when we talk about events, we're talking about seminars. So there's a whole series of educational classes and presentations that continue through the week. There are the fun things, dinners, which do usually sell out quickly just because of limited seating, the dinners, the spirit dinners that happen at the participating bars, of whom there are a lot this year. And there are parties. We call them bar parties. Zach wanted to call them Barties, but we vetoed that idea. bar parties. And these are, again, free to entry, but they're themed parties that kind of go along with whatever sponsor has adopted the bar. We have everything from tiki-themed events. There's a motorcycle-themed event. There's a surf party-themed event. All can see all those things. And then lastly, there's the big ticketed events. Prices are good. $15 usually gets you into any manner of these things. But at the public market site, for 3 days, we have a tent up this year, and we're throwing three different parties, Thursday the 12th, Friday the 13th, Saturday the 14th, with different themes for that weekend.
Okay, so rochestercocktailrevival.com for the full schedule there.
Full schedule and the conduit to get the tickets. Some of the tickets you can buy directly from that site. Otherwise, it'll show you where to go, whether it's to the individual bar or restaurant or the ticketing site for a particular event.
How many cities, Chuck, are doing events like this on an annual basis?
Ooh.
Cocktail revivals.
You guys can help me out. I mean, it's pretty unique for our size. I mean, there's prominent ones in Portland. Manhattan had a big one. I'm sure they'll revive that in some way or another. I think even Brooklyn has a separate one. San Diego has one.
Arizona, New Orleans.
Mexico City.
There are at least a dozen of them, but I bet if you ask someone in Indianapolis how many there were, they wouldn't count ours in it. So I'm believing that we would leave a bunch out that are just not on the radar.
Yeah. We wanted to showcase the culture here, showcase the kind of like the movement that exists, you know, the harmony that exists between all the bars, how we can hang with the major markets, though I don't know that people really see what, you know, see how cool it is and what we're doing here in conjunction with that. Though I will say this, Rochester Cocktail Revival right now functions as the only festival of its kind in New York State, at least right at this moment. Manhattan had a big one. They abandon that idea. So we get a lot of people coming from Metro New York City to Rochester in a couple of weeks to hang out with us and celebrate the culture here, which is kind of cool.
Sure. And, you know, in thinking about how does a city like Rochester get on a kind of a cocktail map, or how do you measure whether you're growing or gaining respect, it's sort of kind of nebulous as an idea. But before the hour began, our guests were telling me some interesting things about that. And I want to kind of explore that a little bit. You know, if you jump online, Thrillist and others, they have their list of up-and-coming cocktail cities outside of New York City. I don't think New York City is up-and-coming as a cocktail city. I think they're pretty well there. But they list the following: San Antonio, Texas; Nashville, Tennessee; St. Louis; Louisville, Kentucky; Oklahoma City; San Diego; Seattle as up-and-coming. And I'm seeing some nods around the table. Rochester's not on that list, but maybe it's just because of a size and sort of respect thing. And, you know, Donnie, I want to start with you on this. You mentioned before the hour began, we are in many ways approximating a major market with what we have here already, yes?
Yes, I believe so.
How is that happening?
I think there are a variety of factors involved, and I don't know that I could. I just moved here a little while ago, so I don't know what it was like shortly ago. I just know what it's like now.
Yep.
And if you were to take the bartending and customer knowledge per capita in New York City or Tokyo or any major market where drinks are very important, we are at least at the same education level and product level as those cities are. We just don't have 150 great bars. We have 15 great bars. So we don't have the market necessarily to support things like a Booker and Dax or an Angel's Share or a sit-down only upside-down drink that is only made from grapes venue, because, like, nope, we need regular clientele. That's a lot of how we survive up here. So we have to be able to all be jacks of all trades all at the same time. So it doesn't look the same as it does in New York, I don't think, but that's because they have the people to support really, really niche markets. And we don't, frankly, yet.
Well, Zach, what would you say to that? How would you explain our ability to kind of approximate a major market or kind of make a dent, even though we're a mid-major and not a major?
Sure. And kind of piggybacking off of what Donnie was saying, you know, I feel like in New York City, where there's such a saturation of wonderful places, you kind of start having to pull at straws to make these more esoteric venues to set yourself aside and kind of differentiate between all the venues. You know, here in Rochester, there's basically kind of a general understanding, one ethos that is make the drink and make it right, you know? And there's a lot of minds that kind of come to that table. And well, Rochester Cocktail Revival was definitely sort of a spearhead for that. Now we all kind of can sit around, you know, one table and talk about the things that matter most. And I think that's one of the most powerful influences and kind of steamrolling us into the place that we need to be. Just, you know, it was kind of funny. Before we came here, we were organizing some stuff for RCR. We're over at Glen Edith, and the owner, John, was like, he looks over to our table, and he sees, you know, Chuck and John Swan from Ox and Stone and Jeff Chang from Playhouse and, you know, a bunch of us sitting around. He's like, man, it's a powerful table. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's cool. It's like, it's great to be able to sit down with other industry professionals, be it bartenders or owners, and be able to sit there and talk about what really matters to us and what will really keep us going in a positive momentum forward, you know, in a trajectory forward. So
can I throw one more thing on top of that before
Sure.
we move on? I think having a USBG chapter, are you familiar with the USBG?
I'm not.
It's the United States Bartenders Guild, and it is a national organization that has chapters located in cities throughout the U.S. In 2008, there were five chapters, and you can guess which five cities they were, the same five cities that get listed in major publications all the time. Now there are 70 chapters in just, 11 years later? No, I'm thinking 2005, sorry. A few years later, whatever, eight.
I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah, I know, sorry. Yeah. No math, I'm not good at this. There are a lot of chapters now, and one of them is in Rochester, which makes now for, I believe, two officially in New York State. The big deal about that is that in order to join something like this, there is a yearly membership fee. So only the people who care the most join, which means that at each meeting, I'm sorry, I have really horrible allergies right now. I don't know why that is.
That's all right. You're good.
I'm good. It means that only the people who care the most get into the same room once a month, and then they share knowledge with each other. So instead of getting stuck in their own four corners of Rochester or of New York or wherever they are, they come together and exchange ideas, and everybody gets smarter because of that. It's another way to chase down the major market thing.
Sure. And Chuck Cerankosky has a very interesting story that I wish you could share for us about St. Germain and kind of going back to the beginning and comparing where trends are coming from.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, Donnie, to kind of lead into that with what Donnie was pointing out about the USBG, we have the fastest growing chapter. Is that accurate, Donnie?
Yes, it is.
So the fastest growing USBG chapter, a city that is not the fastest growing in population, nor is of population that is, you know, equitable with major markets. So proportionately, while we don't have as many cocktail bars, of course, as Manhattan goes, I would bet that we have a disproportionate amount of cocktail bars to population. We have a lot. Evan, what were some of the cities you mentioned that were on Thrillist list? Like, there's just a few of them?
San Antonio, Nashville, St. Louis.
Okay, never heard of any of those. But anyway, the point is that something else that's important is that if you are in, I'm going to guess from what I kind of noticed watching the New York City food and beverage scene, you're in an extremely competitive market. Thousands of bars, tens of thousands of eateries. You better do something different, like upside down, grape only spirit cocktails. In Rochester, none of us that operate bars need to do cocktails. We don't need to. We could open the bar. We could have done this years ago and just said, let's just open another bar. We'll all just pour what everyone tries to order, blue light. We'll pour like crappy vodka and mix it with Sprite. And, you know, we do this because we want to do it. And we're passionate about it. And there's an amazing group of individuals here that have kind of magnetized, you know, kind of that idea has attracted. Again, at all of these bars, Revelry, Oxen Stone, Cheshire, you know, the list goes on and on. Story about St. Germain.
Yeah. Okay. I want you to tell the story. Go ahead.
So one thing we talked about before the microphones were on, and I was getting interrogated, is that a product that probably a lot of listeners are familiar with, St. Germain. It's a popular elderflower liqueur. Unfortunately, the creator of that liqueur passed away yesterday. And what that I remembered thinking about that was in 2007 that liqueur came on the market. My team and I opened Good Luck in 2008. And I remember you went from knowing about a product that it seemed like cool people were using, St. Germain, when we made the menu, and chasing it down, and that's how cocktail scene used to be. Like, you see someone else doing it, oh, I want to do that too. And so the point is that the inspiration is published before you are putting it into action. And now, as we've gotten this group of talented people here that are like pushing this cultural scene forward, it seems very much like the polarity has shifted, where we're doing the cool things, and instead of seeing it in print as inspiration, we see it later as validation. New York Times just put in their food section two articles. One was about split-based cocktails. Split-based cocktails, when you take two primary spirits and you make a cocktail from that. So if you like your Manhattan and you like a rye Manhattan, well, maybe a split-based example would be splitting the proportion or the volume of rye that it originally called for, half and half with scotch, for example. And then voila, you get a cool new drink. Rochester Bar has been doing that for years. Another thing that just appeared in print was the new embrace of aperitivos, aperitivos and bitter liqueurs. I don't know. Zach McKeita is sitting to my right. I think he knows what Fernet Branca is. Like, we've been as a scene, we're pushing the curve just as much as any market is. And now when we look in the magazines, we're not getting inspiration of like, what should we buy and what should we put on our bars? We're seeing like, oh, cool, we're doing that. It's validation instead of inspiration, which is pretty cool.
Let me grab a phone call from Chris in Rochester. And I know he knows some of the guys in the panel, but also just came back from Brussels. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, Brussels, Cognac, Armagnac, Paris, Martinique. And the Rochester Cocktail Revival is actually edging out Kodak for name recognition for Rochester now. Everyone was asking me about the Cocktail Revival. So
that says something about the Cocktail Revival and something about Kodak, but go ahead.
Yeah, no,
never heard of Kodak either.
I said that, that the Rochester Cocktail Revival is actually edging out Kodak.
No, I
Rochester recognition now internationally. And also I wanted to say I was going over some of my notes a while ago, and 5 years ago I was complaining rather bitterly about not being able to find a decent cocktail in Rochester, and that's certainly no longer the case.
Now you can't get away from them.
Well, Chris,
exactly. I've got over 400 on them. I'm closing in on 400 just custom cocktails that are unique to Rochester that we're cataloging and chronicling. But yeah, no, it's really the Rochester cocktail revival has really exploded, and we've got people from all over the world now, at least like I said, in that area, that are, you know, asking me about it and saying, hey, you know, when is it? When can I get in on it somehow, or, you know, et cetera. So it's getting out there.
Well, Chris, thanks for the phone call. And to his point there, sometimes when it comes to landing on the lists of up and coming, sometimes those lists take a year or two or three to realize where everything has kind of gone trend-wise. Let me grab Teresa in Rochester, who wants to give me a little pronunciation lesson. Go ahead, Teresa.
Yes, I'm responding to your earlier request for help with the pronunciation of a French word. I believe you were trying to pronounce V-I-E-U-X.
And that's correct.
And that is vieux.
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 Oh.
Was that part of a vieux carré?
That's right, vieux carré.
Yeah, so that's the old square. That's what it means, old square.
Because vieux is old, yes.
In New Orleans, right?
That's exactly right.
Yes. Okay. That's it. You can use me as a resource anytime.
Thank you, Teresa.
Come have a cocktail, Teresa.
You got it. Vieux carré. That's very French. So, and as Chuck said, that's it was over his. Chuck wasn't a fluent French speaker or pronouncer, but there you are.
I think we have to go in that direction sometimes because someone ordered a Modelo from me the other day. Do you know what that beer is? It's like Mexican Budweiser, sort of.
You mean Bodeo?
This person said, "Yes, please. I would like one Modelo," and I was like, I don't know if you have to change the way you're pronouncing this because it's not supposed to be pronounced that way. So if you say vieux carré, I'll probably know what you're talking about. If you say vieux carré, there goes that anger allergy system I have again. I may not know what you're talking about. Yeah. So to pronounce properly is sometimes to alienate.
No.
To some degree.
Teresa's going to call back and say there's no shame in knowing how
please.
To properly
you
pronounce.
Do what you must. I'm just saying that don't feel any shame in not knowing how to do it.
Okay, well, great. I could go way off a path here and bore you, but I will just say, having been in France last summer, we stayed in a small town, and it was amazing. We'd go to a bigger town nearby, and they'd say, where are you staying? And we'd tell them, and we'd have to try five times to pronounce it. And they'd finally say, oh, you mean the Chevalier? And I went, that's what I just said. They said, no, you said
were you southeast?
No, it was northern Rome. So.
Gotcha.
All right, so anyway, the bottom line is I appreciate it, Teresa, and I know our bartenders secretly do as well, even Donnie.
Quite. It sounds beautiful. Come in and order it from me, please. I'll make it for you.
It does sound beautiful, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'll even put a little extra love into it because it sounds nice.
Let's get a short break. We're going to come back and talk more with our guests about the Rochester Cocktail Revival 2016. It's coming up on May 9th through the 15th. You can check out the full schedule online. I'm going to talk a little bit about competition. Elise and some others have been on the competition scene as we talk about the growing cocktail scene right here in Rochester. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, you might have heard recently Mayor Warren on this program talking about zombie properties in Rochester, and there is a group called Take Back the Land that thinks elected leaders have to do a better job of policing rental properties that become zombie properties. We'll talk about that. Then second hour, the College of Collectible Knowledge is back. Talk with you Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Chuck Sarankoski's here, the founder of the Rochester Cocktail Revival, the co-owner of Good Luck and Cure, and co-founder of Boomtown Table Online. Donnie Clutterbuck's here, the head bartender at Cure. Zach Makita, head bartender at The Revelry. And Elise Barnard, bartender at Good Luck, and a competitor in Boston and New York City Speed Rack. Is that right?
Yes, I competed in Speed Rack in Boston, and it was great. I made the top eight, which you have to do. You know, don't just get to go and compete. You have to make it, then compete to compete. So I made it in the top eight out of 22. I was very proud of myself because I had no penalties for making things poorly. They were all made perfectly, so that makes me feel good.
What are the sort of the parameters for speed competitions? How does it work?
So I think I can only speak for Speed Rack. So you have to make four drinks that everybody knows. They tell you ahead of time, the 22 people in that actual event, and you have to make them fast and accurate so that they don't add more seconds onto your time if they're made poorly. And then once you make that top eight, it's they can pick whatever they want out of a list of 70. So and that goes basically, you know, final four bracket style, eight and then down to four and then down to two. And then the winner goes to Nationals in New York City, and then the wild card, there's like a wild card voting system, and I was the wild card. Thanks, Mom. She blasted Facebook. So, yeah.
So what's your next competition?
May 22nd, and I'm not going to lie, I'm a little scared. It's a lot different than that. You have to make the top eight again, but it's out of 16 people, and most of them are the number one and number two from their competition, and I was not the number two, but I will just practice harder. And they choose for the top eight out of 13 cocktails. So you have to practice a combination of four different variations of those 13, and then it goes into the same thing, final, you know, four bracket style, and it's the same 70 cocktails for that. So it'll be interesting and nerve-wracking, and I'm excited.
Alex writes us an email and just wants to know, and you're a good person to ask considering you have to do this in speed competitions, but Alex just wants to know, realistically, in a given week, how many different cocktail drinks are your guests making? How many different kinds? In 1 week, over the next week, how many different kinds of drinks do you think you'll make, Elise?
Oh, man, I don't know, 30, 40, maybe more. It just depends on any given day.
Okay, the most common is?
I would say at Good Luck, we make a ton of Manhattans. I probably make the most Manhattans. And then a lot of our signature drinks are very popular. I make a ton of Knock on Woods or Ina Martina. It's lots of drinks.
Okay. How many in a week over there, Donnie?
I would say out of maybe six categories, eight adaptations of each one of those categories, plus a bunch that don't fall into a category an average week.
So
maybe.
50 plus. And most popular
at
that
least.
You're serving?
I have no idea. What is it?
Oh.
You make that, so many daiquiris.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
daiquiri, all,
everything's
Donnie.
A daiquiri. Never mind. Yeah. So it's either a daiquiri or it's like a daiquiri. So that, yeah.
You can order a drink called like a daiquiri?
Well, you can say, give me something like a daiquiri, and I'll give you something that's like a daiquiri.
Okay.
Donnie is, you know, in addition to being head bartender at Cure One Thing, he's also the president of the USBG, the Rochester chapter. But Donnie is one of, it falls into a category of being one of the most skilled individuals I think we've seen at being able to make up custom drinks on the spot, like bespoke cocktails, or as we call them, which all bartenders are very skilled at doing, all good cocktail bartenders. So Donnie probably makes a gazillion different drinks. They're all fingerprints. They're
it's
all,
like
none,
barely
the
same one twice. You know, yeah. I instead of saying how many drinks I make a week, I would say how many times I make the same drink a week, and it's like several, not 40 or 80.
Yeah, that's
unless it's a menu item drink that's very heavily ordered. In which case, you know, you might make 30 to 100 of those each.
Well, listeners, if you're just joining us, we're previewing the 2016 Rochester Cocktail Revival, talking about Rochester's place as a cocktail city, and our guests are involved in many different ways there. This is your chance, if you've got any questions about cocktails, mixed drinks, et cetera, and I've got a pile coming in, so this is a great chance to ask some of the experts on this stuff, and I will relay them for you, or you can call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm going to work through some of them here. Richard says, Evan, I prefer two drinks that I think are cocktails, a Bloody Mary and a Pina Colada. He says, however, I prefer that they be made from scratch instead of with mixes. Is there a preferred way to ask a bartender to make a drink from scratch instead of with a mix?
Go to a good bar.
Yeah.
Go to a good bar and ask it just like that.
We don't use perfect. Mixes, really. Yeah. If it is a mix, it's our mix. And there's a difference between a store-bought mix and something we've mixed ourselves. Can't physically mix 20 different things on the spot. Nobody would get their drinks all night.
With a Bloody Mary, you know which bars are doing it on their own and which bars are doing it from a Sacramento tomato juice can in general. And with a pina colada, anything that has a blender behind the bar and you see a live pineapple, like not a can, but like a live actual pineapple.
Well, they're not like live like an animal, man.
No,
they're
not like
gonna get up and
not
walk
like with legs and such, but I mean like one
like
that
a fresh
looks
one.
Like food.
I think fresh
and
is
isn't already in a can when
never
when you
heard
say
of a live pineapple. Yeah. Is this a different kind?
Is that a dead pineapple?
Yeah,
it's a new cocktail.
But
so
I would say
fresh pineapple.
That would be the ideal pina colada.
So at the Rev, I've been known to, like, even on a busy Saturday night, somebody comes in and they ask for a blender drink. I'll run back into the kitchen and grab the Vitamix and bring it out because we have outlets all underneath the bar, and I'll just start whipping up blender drinks. It's a lot of fun, you know?
And there is always a pineapple on the bar, too. There's always a pineapple.
Chuck's got this look on his face going, do I want to say what I think? He's going to pull it back here. Andrew writes to the program and says, good luck makes one of the better vodka old fashions in Rochester, and the bartenders do it without looking at me as if I have a third eye on my head. Lento's also makes a decent version. I also wish that local bars included more New York State products. We rightfully promote Finger Lakes wines and local beers, but all too often some bars only have the popular international spirits. That's a shame. That's from Andrew. Any thoughts on that panel?
First of all, you ordering, there's nothing wrong with vodka at all, if that's what you prefer. You order a cool drink, a vodka old fashioned. That's a very simple way to make a cool vodka cocktail. Again, you pumping the drink full of Sprite, maybe there's a better way than that. So glad you enjoy that drink. That's cool. New York State spirits. We could devote a whole program to that if we wanted to. We try... I can say all of us sitting at the table, all of our bars, whether it's Lockhouse Distillery in Buffalo, Black Button products right here in Rochester, Meyer Farm, so Apple Country is huge, Apple Country Spirits. They get a lot of support. It's still, I think we're in it together with those craftsmen in awaiting their master, them mastering the craft, because you're falling, when you start a distillery in the state of New York and you're making bourbon, you're a couple hundred years behind the people doing it very well in Kentucky. That's one thing. I'm not saying that the products are not good, but we're carefully selecting which are emerging as the best. Second of all, we are also always fighting brand awareness, because I think all of the cocktail revival bars, which we'll list in a second, but all of the cocktail revival bars have at least some example of a New York State spirit, because we like to use it and we like to support the local business. We're always kind of fighting the idea of, if somebody wants that Grey Goose, you can say, I got Black Button vodka, and do you have Tito's? Yeah, I got Tito's. And then they're going to go order Tito's, because they're trying to order a brand name. They're not trying to go on a journey. But it is important. Cocktail Revival pays huge homage to that on Saturday the 14th during the day at the public market site at the tent. We hold what we call the Farm to Shaker Tasting. We have over 30 distilleries from all across New York State that we are using funding to bring into Rochester, and they will be from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. showcasing products in that tent at the public market. So great way to get involved and for consumers to pick out their favorite things and then bug your favorite bartenders to carry them.
Tom writes an email to the program with a couple of questions, and the first two are related regarding the way we treat drinking in society in general. He says, why do people giggle at the mention of intoxication? And he says, what is the responsibility of the bartender in the drinking proposition? Do they have to turn people off?
Of drinking?
Yeah.
Sometimes? Yeah, absolutely. There's a point in time, and it often coincides with, if you can't say the drink, you can't have the drink. Or if your eyes are not focused.
Not
or
including
if
the Bukkake.
Yeah.
Because nobody can say that one.
If your mouth won't function to let the words out that your brain wants to say, that is a clear cutoff point. But it's long before that, because I think a lot of people forget that there is a full 2 ounces of booze in pretty much every drink that's out there. Even a little more in the case of things like the Manhattan or the Old Fashioned even. So if you see someone get after 3 of those very quickly, you might want to be like, just subtly hand them a water and walk away for a little while. Let's see how they feel afterwards.
Do you do that with some routine?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, after screwing that up too many times, I've learned how to avoid it for sure.
Okay. It's legally and ethically our responsibility behind the bar to make sure that no one overindulges outside of having fun. I mean, it's strange when you think about it that you entrust this trade to help people regulate what they consume, when we fight back and forth about salt warnings and sugar warnings and soda taxes and suing tobacco companies. It is our responsibility to make sure that people do not overindulge. Sometimes it's difficult, but every good bartender, that's their mission, to make sure people have fun, but not to the point of hurting themselves or others.
Sure, and you know, I've had conversations with people like Chuck and people who are involved with the Rochester Cocktail Revival in the past, and as much as they do want to have a great time with a lot of people there, everybody's been at a party where somebody who's really intoxicated can ruin the party. That's not what people are going for. I don't think anybody in this room is looking for that. So I appreciate that sentiment. And Tom, it was a very fair question and a good email. A couple more have come in online here. Let's see here. Backing up. Monica just said, will you please mention Cheshire Cocktail Lounge on South Avenue, where we first experienced the Rochester Cocktail Revival, helping put Rochester on the map. Well, let's mention who's on the list, Chuck Sarankowski.
Okay, so our we've expanded the list this year to include, we've got, I think, about 14 bars. But the Cocktail Revival is presented by Good Luck, The Revelry, Cure, The Daily Refresher, Cheshire, The Owl House, The Playhouse, Ox and Stone, with help from Fee Brothers and Black Button Distilling, also in partnership with Rue, Lento, Orbs, The Cub Room, Char, La Casa, and Trata.
That's the list.
That's the list right there. And Cheshire, fantastic bar with us from the start. Great place. Good pick. Good place to experience the Cocktail Revival.
All right, I've got some of my own questions, not the least of which is, I won't mention which bar, but a few years ago, there was a certain bar that was celebrating 1 or 2 years in business, and I think it was 1 year, and they had their own barrel, Manhattan by Barrel. You know, one of those little mini barrel right there on the counter. And I thought, boy, that's great. And I thought we could get a barrel, and we could put a Vieux Carré or a Manhattan in it at home. And then was told, you're technically not allowed to do that. So technically I didn't.
At home, but you can.
Yeah.
You can,
yes,
at home.
Do whatever, yeah, you want.
But bars can't do that?
Bars are not allowed to do anything. Technically, I don't even know if we're allowed to shake cocktails,
okay,
by the
law. Because I totally
law.
Did that. But
it's all legal gray area.
Yes.
You can do anything like that at home you want. You can't sell it, though.
Right.
You
get.
Okay. But you guys can't? You can't take a drink that you're mixing and just put it in a barrel?
There was a law that was put into place to prevent people from putting McCormick whiskey into Crown Royal bottles. God, not even necessarily those brands, but you're not allowed to take a spirit out of a bottle and then not just sell it. It can't go anywhere but to the customer.
What's the reason?
That.
For that.
They don't want you to lie.
So you're not putting cheap vodka into an expensive vodka bottle or whatever it is.
The idea deception is it's about consumer protection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes. There's a lot of interpretations of that rule. You see people, there's methods now to legally serve a cocktail on draft, meaning making a large batch of cocktails and then serving it from a large premix container. There are probably ways to barrel age, but it is, again, it's a legal gray area. You can do whatever you want at home, though.
Okay. Would you guys do more of that if you could?
I can give you one good reason not to, or two.
Sure.
Either one you'd like.
Yeah.
The barrel, what you're putting into the cocktail, it was often came from a barrel on its own, and it was barreled to the point it should have been barreled by the producers, I guess, druthers. So if you put it all into another barrel, the aging doesn't occur, just the extraction of vanilla and caramel does. So if you want to make the drink sweeter in that way, basically just make it taste like vanilla and caramel, that's a very good way to do that. If you don't, then I say don't. Because the producers themselves, like if you put, I don't know, Whistlepig and some sweet vermouth that came out of a barrel and Campari all together into a barrel to make a barrel-aged Boulevardier or a 1792 or whatever that drink's called, you might anger the gods of whiskey creation because you're putting something from a barrel back into a different barrel that they didn't choose. So pros and cons, you know, whatever you like, really.
All right. So help me out here. What is milk washing?
Milk washing is putting gin into milk. Well, not gin specifically, but in some cases it can be gin. Gin into whole milk, letting it sit for a moment, curdling it with citric acid, allowing it to sit for another, say, half an hour or 20 minutes, which allows the milk to give the spirit some whey protein so that after you either strain the milk out so that you have clear gin at the end of it, or you can centrifuge it or whatever you have a clear booze that when you shake it, it fluffs up as if there is dairy or egg white in it, but there is none of the flavor or downsides of it. When you make an egg drink, it sometimes smells like a wet dog a little bit after that, so you have to drink the drink very quickly. But you don't have to do it in the case of milk washing because you get most of the desired effect with none of the downfall.
Okay. Smoking. I understand smoking pretty well. Smoked foods, smoked cocktails. Chuck, you mentioned smoking, right?
Yes. Smoking has... First of all, smoke is prevalent in some liquors, native liquors anyway. Islay Scotch. from the smoked peat from which it helps in its production, as well as mezcal. That's one way to get smoke into cocktails. We also see a lot of bars doing some pretty cool things in applying smoke to the drinks at time of preparation. A lot of examples of that. I think that has roots in, you know, from two areas. One, that smoke is a pretty cool taste. It's good, gives like a good savory balance to the drink. It might help it pair with food. And it's really, the second is that it's really neat to watch. You're usually involving fire or, you know, some sort of incineration and the, you know, the whether it's smoking ice or smoking the glass or all kinds of things. It's pretty cool. It's almost like a cocktail parlor trick, a good one at that, but it's easily achievable.
I think we can throw that on the list of things that turn our perception of drink into the same as our perception of food, whereas like you smoke meats, like ribs, you know, like that's a big part of a lot of food culture. And if you can use all of the food tricks in drinks, you can get drinks that have more pieces to them.
Sure. All right, and before we start to close the hour, I'm going to ask our guests if they could pick one event on the Cocktail Revival schedule where they're going to be going. But before we do that, you know, our guests have mentioned that the cocktails themselves have become kind of like food, but there's also plenty of chances to pair them with food. Having written for a number of years about wine, I can tell you that I think we can over-obsess on pairing some things. You know, wine pairing with food, it can be wonderful, and it can be overly obsessive and overly pedantic. And I certainly would never want anybody to get paralyzed about this must be with this or this must be with this. But what are some good rules of thumb for pairing cocktails with food? Are there general ideas that match very well together? You know, I'll go around the table. Elise, can I start with you?
I mean, I guess it just depends. I think if you like the food and you like the drink, they don't necessarily need to go together. I don't drink while I eat. I'm that person that will eat or drink. I don't do both at the same time. So I think if you like your drink and you like your food, you should just be happy and do you.
Okay.
So my wine knowledge is really basic. I'm not like super into it. But I do like the idea of tannins and presence in wine. So to balance food and wine, you're looking at a game of levels. You don't want either to overpower the other. If something's very greasy, you want something very tannic. If something has a lot of body, you want a wine with a lot of body. Neither should be too strong. In the case of pairing cocktails, though, I would go more with make the cocktail what the food is not. If the food is not salty, you make the drink salty. If the food is not savory, you make the drink savory. But if the food is sweet, you don't make the drink sweet. You know, because then you just have two of the same. So whereas cocktails and food should do this a little bit, wine and food. I'm sorry, I'm making hand motions.
Yeah,
cocktails and food are sort of on a seesaw with each other, and wine and food should be at levels with one another.
Okay, so you think of cocktails as a counterpoint to the food. Very interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, and just kind of piggybacking off of Donnie, that's exactly right. You know, you think about the five sensories that we have: umami, bitter. You know, the sweets, the smoky, whatever you got going
salty,
on. I think of it as contrast, right? So I would open the flavor Bible, and if you look at Thai cuisine and curry, you might want to have a cocktail with ginger in it, you know, and have kind of like fun counterpoints and affinities for each other in that regard. You know?
Okay. Chuck?
Yeah, those very I completely agree. There's not much left.
Hard to say. Left one, huh,
but, but yeah.
The point is, you don't disagree on how
I don't
to pay.
No, they're exactly right. Definitely make the drink what the food is not. There's also a very convenient, you know, aspect to the pairing where you'll find that, strangely enough, agave spirits, they pair pretty well with Mexican food. Bourbons pair pretty well with, you know, Southern barbecue or, you know, Midwestern barbecue. So you can, you know, you don't want to, you can, of course, can make, there can be, you know, cases where those aren't true, but it's pretty good to look at the cuisine of origin, the spirits native to that area, because they're probably made with the you know, the base, the same produce, and go with that.
All right, about 30 seconds apiece, because we're down to our last 2 minutes. The Cocktail Revival is May 9th through the 15th, rochestercocktailrevival.com. A lot of different events going on there, some ticketed, some more open to get in. But if you can pick one, I'm going to go around the table. Danny, you're picking one. Where are you going?
I'm working mostly, so I'm going to go to the event that I'm working for, which is the Jägermeister dinner on Saturday. And it's a Saturday night, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Because I get to write the cocktails for the food that are going together. And I believe there are five courses, so that's going to be a fun journey for me to try to balance cocktails with five courses, all including one ingredient.
Okay. Elise?
I'd go Saturday, support local. I'm starting a local business, so I say go local. Go to the public market, try all the New York products, roll out.
Okay. Zach?
Again, you know, working every single event, I'm not going to be seen at very many outside of the Revelry. But if you were to go to one, I would say the Sunday night bartender battle royale at Playhouse, which is just, it's kind of like the... It's the icing on the cake. You know, it's one last hurrah before we all wake up hungover the next day.
I forgot about that one.
That's a good one.
And Jack?
Friday night, the 13th, the Heaven Hotel event at the public market. Lots of cocktail demonstrations, spirit samplings. The Coupe de Villes are playing spirits from Heaven Hill. I'm going to plug one more, too. George
sure.
Eastman Museum, same night, doing a really really cool event in partnership, a James Bond event with the George Eastman Museum right there in the museum grounds. That'll be pretty cool, too.
I imagine the taxi service scene in this city, and we don't have Uber and Lyft in this city, but I imagine... What?
Oh, here Friday and Saturday night. We solved that problem this year. It's called the Paddy Wagon. It's going to be S&S limousines. It's going to be a big limo bus emblazoned with Labatt Blue decals. Traveling around the Rochester cocktail bar circuit on both Friday and Saturday night. So you can safely shuttle between the bars and then taxi at home. But from 6 p.m. until 2 a.m., running a circuit around basically the east side of Rochester between all of our bars, Friday and Saturday night, the 13th and 14th.
And we'll reiterate the point again. You're there to have fun, but they are very serious about making sure people are traveling safely every day of that. So I want to thank our guests for being here. You just heard Chuck Sarankowski, founder of the Rochester Cocktail Revival. And thanks for being here, Chuck. Nice to talk to you again, Senator Sarankowski. Very good. Donnie Clutterbuck, head bartender at Cure.
Thank you.
Donnie. Thank you very much. Zach Makita, head bartender at The Revelry.
Thanks, Evan.
Elise Barnard, bartender at Good Luck. Have fun and good luck in your upcoming competitions as well, Elise.
See what you did there.
Thank you.
You see what I did there? That was very clever. Our thanks to Catch Wars, who is our engineer of the broadcast, Megan Max, the producer, and our thanks to our departing interns, Kate Cowie Haskell and Marielle Brinkerhoff, have done wonderful work for us all semester for them. Thank you, Kate. Great seeing you behind the glass there. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great day. We'll talk with you Friday.